Stefano Della Kind.
And this is the live Nip/Tuck, cutting back in on the tape Nip/Tuck to tell you that you've probably heard about all you need to know in terms of general things about Stefano Della Chiai at this point of the broadcast tonight. Stefano Della Chiai has been front and center throughout the evening. And again, though, some very interesting happenstances, specifically with Sendero Luminoso, this Maoist group. You will remember, of course, Terza Posizione, another group with which Stefano Della Chiai was affiliated, a group that supposedly espoused the political philosophies of Hitler, Gaddafi, and Mao. Rather interesting. And again, also interesting in view of the attempted not only destabilization but destruction of the Bolivian government and the kidnapping of Hernan Siles Suazo by the Leopardos, the U.S.-trained, DEA-trained anti-drug agents who you will remember, of course, in that last article, a couple of articles back, we discovered that Joachim Fiebelkorn of Klaus Barbie's Bridegrooms of Death claimed DEA sponsorship.
And remember now, Stefano Della Chiai is a far rightist. What he's doing with a bunch of Maoist guerrillas remains to be seen, but it's worth noting that the Sendero Luminoso are bringing about the end of Peruvian democracy. The reaction that they're fomenting is simply wiping out all vestiges of democracy in the country. Recalling of Stefano Della Chiai's strategy of tension philosophy, one wonders whether instead of aping the left this time and producing terrorist incidents, he's simply manipulating them, which of course is, as we've talked about in these programs in the past, the most effective kind of provocation. A sincere jerk, a sincere fanatic is the most useful of all.
Yes, and again, this might also be applied in thinking about such groups as the Red Brigades in Italy, of which there are probably some sincere leftist members, but who, as we mentioned, Licio Gelli firmly alleged as the as one of the founders of, and of course a group that has almost entirely blackened the eye of the left in Italian political circles for some time. Okay, now we're going to continue on with the American connections and also beginning to get to the underpinnings of the Bulgarian thesis, the one that everybody is familiar with, the one that 9 out of 10 people, if you mention this special and mention the assassination attempt on Pope John Paul II, will say, oh yeah, you mean about the Bulgarians trying to shoot the Pope.
We're not actually going to get to the Bulgarian thesis itself tonight, but what we're doing tonight is showing the context in which all of the key players who have presented that thesis exist, and that in turn will help us reflect accurately, as well as the facts itself, on the just who lies behind not only the shooting of the Pope, but also the creation of the Bulgarian thesis itself.
That's right. Now remember, at the very beginning of the broadcast, we talked about Michele Sindona's links to David Kennedy, the Treasury Secretary for Richard Nixon. We talked about Sindona's other many other links before to the CIA.
Also the fact that his legal work in this country was handled by Richard Nixon's law firm.
That's right, a law firm involved in some other rather interesting things, including the sheltering of Romanian fascists, among others, and Croatian fascists, and all kinds of neat people. We talked about not only Sindona's various connections, but of course we have mentioned in the past that Licio Gelli himself, during the time of the Rat Line, made connections with United States intelligence. Stefano Della Chiai, obviously through Klaus Barbie, who is actively working for U.S. intelligence. Joachim Fiebelkorn, who himself was talking about his own connections with the Drug Enforcement Agency, et cetera, et cetera. The Leopardos, operating apparently on behalf of somebody, but trained by the DEA. Numerous connections between Western intelligence and the Italian fascist coup attempts. The Greek colonel's coup of 1967, which was actively assisted by the U.S. as well as by the P2. So the U.S. intelligence connections to this are various and multifaceted. Anyway, reading again from covert action, well, actually from a different covert action information bulletin, this one, number 22 from the fall of 1984, the headline for this article is Italian Officials Finger Ladine, CIA. The Italian magazine L'Espresso carried some very significant news in its August 5, 1984 issue, news virtually unreported in the U.S. press. Its report focused on the investigations of the Parliamentary Oversight Committee for the Secret Services, and in particular, interviews with Vincenzo Parisi, the new head of SISDE, the Italian Internal Security Organization, and with Fulvio Martini, the new head of SISMI, the Military Intelligence Organization. Both men had complaints about the U.S. administration. You will, of course, remember from earlier in the broadcast about how SISMI and Super SISMI, a secret organization within SISMI, became basically one operating arm of the P2 Masonic Lodge. Parisi was updating Parliament on the ongoing hunt for Stefano Della Chiaia and on the Bologna bombing. He referred to the nearly legendary inability to capture him, sua fin troppo leggendaria imprendabilità. Never mind. And mentioned that Della Chiaia, it's too late to speak Italian, and mentioned that Della Chiaia traveled throughout the Western Hemisphere undisturbed. He had, Parisi said, powerful protection. Quote, who, someone asked, a superpower? Parisi replied diplomatically that the U.S. Secret Service was giving the Italians, quote, insufficient help. Admiral Martini's remarks to the Oversight Committee were less diplomatic. In attempting to show the vigor and independence he had brought to Sisimi in his first 3 months in office, he said he had informed the appropriate authorities of a person who should not come back to Italy. This was someone, he said, who could be called an undesirable, un indesiderabile, but who was really, he stressed, a meddler, un mestatore. In fact, he concluded, he had notified the U.S. ambassador in Rome, Maxwell Rabb, that the U.S. citizen he did not want to see return to Italy ever again was Michael Ledeen.
So we've seen here allegations by two Italian intelligence chiefs, not only that the U.S. is protecting Stefano Della Chiaia, something that's not all that surprising in light of all the work he's done on behalf of U.S. intelligence in conjunction with their support of the whole P2 nexus, but beyond that, we're coming into acquaintance here with one of the prime players on the whole Pope shooting scene, namely Michael Ledeen. Now, Michael Ledeen is an intimate of this whole P2 conglomeration, I guess you could say. And along with Michael Ledeen, another name that's going to, a man whose career is inextricably linked with Ledeen's, and a person who's also going to come very much more sharply into focus when we actually talk about the shooting of the Pope in our next two programs, is a man named Francesco Pazienza. And in Penny Lur News and Banks We Trust, she describes something of the relationship between Ledeen and Pazienza as follows. Equally suggestive was the claim by Francesco Pazienza, who worked as a consultant for Calvi, that he had found a group of buyers who were willing to pay $1.2 billion for 12% of Ambrosiano's stock. Pazienza claimed that he represented U.S., Iranian, and Saudi interests, and that his partner in the deal was Robert R. Mao, president of the Vatican Foundation of Saints Benedict, Cyril, and Methodius, who was asked to help the Vatican's investigative commission in sorting out the Vatican Bank's affairs after the Ambrosiano scandal. According to Pazienza, Armau had worked for many years with the Shah of Iran as his head of protocol and was, quote, a close collaborator of David Rockefeller, unquote. Pazienza himself had good contacts in the Middle East, particularly Saudi Arabia, through missions there on behalf of Italy's military intelligence service, SISMI, interrupting, of course, SISMI, a prime player on the whole P2 conglomerate that we've looked at. Continuing with the Widler News account, Pazienza acknowledged to an Italian parliamentary commission investigating P2 links that Sisimi had paid him for his services through a secret Swiss account during the period when the intelligence service was run by a general who belonged to the P2. Interrupting, that was Santovito. Continuing, Pazienza also claimed to be a friend of Michael Ledeen, a consultant for the Undersecretary of Political Affairs at the State Department and formerly employed by the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a right-wing think tank. Ledeen helped popularize the imaginative thesis of international terrorism, unquote, as one big Soviet plot to destabilize the West, Italy being an example, but his interpretation of Italian affairs was questioned by the European press, which suggested Ledeen had links with Jelly and the P2, and that Ledeen, on behalf of the State Department, had tried to buy 480 P2 files photocopied by the Uruguayan Interior Ministry after the raid on Ortolani's mansion in Montevideo. Interrupting, we spoke about that earlier. Pazienza also reportedly told the Italian Parliamentary Commission that he was friendly with former Secretary of State Alexander Haig, quote, when he was head of NATO, because we were both involved together in some business incidental to an American industry that produces arms, unquote. The report of Ledeen's P2 links and Haig's relations with Pazienza were based on leaks from the secret hearings by the Italian Parliamentary Commission and were therefore unconfirmed. I would add that in the years since Penny Lur News has published her book, many of these links have since been confirmed beyond a doubt. Still, if Jelly were to be believed, Pazienza had some powerful friends in Italy and Washington. Quote, beware that Pazienza is important. He maintains relations with the Mafia and Haig, Jelly wrote in a letter of introduction for Pazienza. They also say that he belongs to the CIA, or wants to, unquote. Such relations would not be unusual. Both the Nixon and Reagan administrations dealt with the same milieu as shown by Sindona's high-level connections in the former's administration and by some of the guests at the latter's political functions. They include, but the latter, of course, is Reagan, they include Jelly, who was invited by Republican bigwig Phil Garino to Reagan's inaugural ball, which Jelly attended, and Miguel Angel Napu, reportedly Paraguay's biggest smuggler with links to Nixon's confidant Baby Rebozo and South American heroin traffickers. Napu received an invitation to attend the Republican convention where he interviewed presidential candidate Reagan. More importantly for our purposes here, Licio Gelli's presence at Reagan's inaugural ball and also Phil Garino, and Nip's going to read you a little, well, we're going to come back to them in a little bit. What we're going to be talking about right now concerns a little bit more about the Pazienza and Michael Ledeen axis. And we'll be coming back to Jelly, Garino, and Reagan in just a second.
That's right. And as this this whole thing develops over the next couple of weeks, Pazienza and Ledeen are going to assume more and more importance in terms of what they know and what they have not talked about and what they have claimed. Anyway, but talking a little bit more, as Dave said, about the Pazienza-Ledeen axis, this is from one of Jonathan Marshall's translations from L'Espresso from November 4th, 1984. Pazienza is frenzied. His acquaintances run from mafia bosses like Toto Inzerillo and Rosario Spatola and men of affairs like socialist Ferdinando Mack and Monsignor Marchinkus to businessmen like Flavio Carboni. He opens, for example, a branch of Sismi in Luxembourg. To what end? It will be discovered in turn by General Nino Lugaresi, who takes the post of P2 member Santavito as head of the service. This center in Luxembourg doesn't serve for espionage, but, more simply, for the export of capital. With security, under cover of the Italian Counter-Espionage Service, an institution of the state that conspires against the state. And this is what was officially testified to by Federico Umberto D'Amato, ex-head of the Office of Reserved Affairs in the Interior Ministry, and later director of the Customs Service. Quote, in the autumn of 1980, Pazienza brought me a certain Michael Ledeen, who I knew well already for many years. He is a journalist who is always occupied with Italian matters, above all with problems of terrorism and subversion, with a certain competence, if a peculiar point of view. Ledeen was already a collaborator of the Italian services because he had followed, along with two ex-elements of the CIA, the course of the Moro case. Of course, again, we're referring to Aldo Moro, the prime minister, who was kidnapped by the Red Brigades and whose assassination by those same Red Brigades, remember, helped in their founding by Licio Gelli, whose assassination destroyed the communist chance of participating in legitimate politics in Italy. He was a man who pointed desperately to the victory of Reagan and was in Italy, they're talking about Ledeen still, and was in Italy looking to combine, as is said in Neapolitan, a plate of Carter with the story of his brother Billy. Together with Ledeen and Pazienza, we went to supper one evening. Ledeen told me that he was putting on a campaign against the brother of Carter, of course we're talking about President Carter, who he said was corrupt, dissolute, working with the Libyans. They succeeded in making an interesting case through a contact they created with the lawyer Michele Papa of Catania, Gaddafi's man. They got this Papa to speak with a journalist who went with a microphone and got him to say compromising things. And Ledeen, through a chain of important newspapers, spread these articles a few days before the presidential election. I informed the head of the police and the minister of all this, unquote. That was the Billy Gates scandal. But there was more scandal in this story. That Sismi lent itself to an international political espionage operation to damage an American president, Carter, to the advantage of his adversary, Reagan. But it is also serious, if D'Amato tells the truth, that all this was known to the minister Virginio Ragnoni and the police chief Rinaldo Coronas. Placido Magri, Pazienza's secretary, recounts, quote, Pazienza and Ledeen participated in the Billygate operation, which unfolded in two phases. We succeeded in drawing near a barman in the Rome Hilton, and he recounted to us what happened in Billy Carter's room during his stay. I remember that as a joke, Ledeen presented me with a box of matches with the effigy of Carter. The second phase consisted of inducing the lawyer, Papa, to chat freely with the journalist, Giuseppe Settimeri. The conversation was recorded with a micro-recorder furnished by Sismi. The material was then given to Ledeen, who published articles in Giornale Nuovo and his American newspaper, unquote. So bear in mind here, not only is Ledeen working with Pazienza for this story, but they're being aided and abetted directly by Sismi, the Italian intelligence operation, connected very directly to the P2. With the Billygate operation, the supergroup, that's the super sees me, including Musumeci and Pazienza, entered into the good graces of the new American administration. The latter, above all, began to take on an official role, however unjustified. They're talking about Pazienza here. He, agent of Sismi, began to be seen in the USA as an official Italian interlocutor. According to D'Amato, in the early days of the administration, before Maxwell Rabb got to Rome, Reagan distrusted the ambassador there, Gardner, and, quote, in a certain sense, relations between the political class in Italy and the new group in power in the U.S. were handled by Pazienza and Ledeen. The American embassy did nothing. Neither did the CIA. Montgomery, who was station chief, was replaced immediately. Therefore, there was a period of paralysis, as if the American embassy didn't exist, unquote.
So basically, we have the P2 nexus in the persons of primarily Francesco Pazienza and his American associate Michael Ledeen, also reportedly very close to Haig, actively interfering in the U.S. presidential election. It's interesting that a Qaddafi connection should enter in here. Qaddafi's role in the whole P2 complex we're going to be going into next week as we move our the focus of our discussion to Africa, both North and South and the Middle East. And Qaddafi, as I say, will come in next week. Recall now that Michael Ledeen and the P2 axis actively interfering on behalf of President Reagan in an American election. And that, among others, that may have been one of the reasons why Licio Gelli wound up as an honored guest at Ronald Reagan's inauguration. We're going to tell you about another of those reasons right now. Returning to In God's Name by David Yalop. Of Licio Gelli, he writes, the puppet master, who uses the secret codename Luciani, continues to give impressive demonstrations of the fact that he is a man of extraordinary influence. In 1979, Gelli and Ortolani began working to bring about a political reconciliation among Christian Democrat leader and former Prime Minister Giulio Andreotti and the socialist leader Bettino Craxi. The exposure of nearly 1,000 P2 members in 1981 slowed down these delicate negotiations. They have now flowered. At the time of this writing, the Prime Minister of Italy is Bettino Craxi. The Foreign Minister is Giulio Andreotti. Both men have much for which to thank Licio Gelli. I would also add, interrupting here, that in our last broadcast, we're going to go back and deal with Andreotti and his membership in the Knights of Malta, among other organizations. Continuing. On April 8th, 1980, Gelli wrote from Italy to Philip Guarino, or Garino, G-U-A-R-I-N-O, a senior member of the Republican National Committee, which at the time was concentrating all its efforts on getting Ronald Reagan elected president. Gelli wrote, quote, if you think it might be useful for something favorable to your presidential candidate to be published in Italy, send me some material and I'll get it published in one of the papers here, unquote. Without any knowledge of the power that Gelli wielded, one might find this a very strange offer. How could a man who officially owned no newspapers guarantee sympathetic coverage for Reagan? The answer lies in a consortium of P2 members plus the Vatican-controlled Rizzoli, the massive publishing group with interests stretching as far as Buenos Aires. Among the many magazines and newspapers was Corriere della Sera, Italy's most prestigious newspaper. Other P2 members were planted throughout the television, radio, and newspaper media of the country. The favorable comments about Ronald Reagan, carefully placed by Licio Gelli, duly appeared in Italy. In January of 1981, Licio Gelli was an honored guest at the presidential inauguration. Guarino later ruefully observed, quote, he had a better seat than I did, unquote. And it may be that Licio Gelli had a better seat than Phil Guarino at more things than one, as Nip's about to read you.
Yes, and interestingly enough, Phil Guarino is not only a member of the Republican National Party, he has some other interesting connections as well. And they're talking here in, again, we're reading from, I just lost my page here.
That's St. Peter's Banker.
Yes, that's right. By Luigi DeFonso.
Right.
Reading again, we're talking about, as we talked about last week, the time at which Il Crack Sindona was at its height and Sindona's power was crumbling and he was in the United States attempting not to get extradited and having people write letters on his behalf explaining that it was all a communist plot to get poor Michele. And they're talking about, among other people, Licio Gelli wrote an affidavit stating approximately that. And then DeFonso goes on to write, 10 other prominent Italians were persuaded to give statements. John McCaffrey and Phil Guarino also made formal declarations. Guarino, a 75-year-old American priest who had studied at the Vatican's Pontifical Urban University, was national chairman of the Italian-American division of the Republican National Committee and an honorary member of P2. So it does go round. It does go round. And boy, if you want connections, boy, you just got to join that old P2.
Now, and again, this is not something which is limited to Italy or even just Latin America. This is an international fascist network with very, very deep connections in the United States and obviously a major player on the American political scene as well as elsewhere. Now, again, the American connection to this whole nexus that we've been looking at going clear back to the rat line is paramount here. And one of the things that basically we're going to focus on for the duration of the broadcast is we're going to speculate and we're going to take a look at the possible role of American intelligence in the U.S. national security establishment in the very founding of the P2. A hint of what that role might be, or how influential the U.S. intelligence might be, and it's only one of many forces that could be the upper pyramid here of a scenario we're going to present, an indication of how important U.S. intelligence may be in the founding of the P2 Lodge is carried in an article from the Manchester Guardian, now known as just the Guardian, from May 11, 1984, research credit to Ted Rubenstein. This is from Campbell Page's, the Guardian's Rome correspondent, and it's headlined, P2 Lodge Suspected of Links Abroad. Again, Manchester Guardian, May 11th, 84. A parliamentary report on one of Italy's most notorious scandals, the activities of the secret Masonic Lodge Propaganda Due, or P2, says that its murky activities were controlled by an unidentified group which might well have extended beyond Italian frontiers. In the report's own words, there is a need for an interpretation not restricted to narrow domestic horizons, unquote. The document uses the image of P2 as a pyramid, with Licio Gelli, Grand Master of the Lodge, at its apex. Above that is an inverted pyramid with Gelli as the point of contact between it and P2. The rest of the upper pyramid remains unknown. The report, written by Ms. Tina Anselmi, the Christian Democrat member of the Chamber of Deputies who has chaired the Parliamentary Commission of Inquiry into P2 for the past 2.5 years, confirms that Gelli, aged 65, worked for Eastern European intelligence services in the immediate post-war period and later developed close contact with the Italian secret services. There has been widespread press speculation here that as Grand Master of the P2, Gelli may have had links with some other Western intelligence services. That's not at all an imaginative thesis, as we're going to take a look for the concluding element in our discussion this evening. We're going to take a look at some of the circumstances surrounding the upgrading of Italian Freemasonry, and not only the role of American Freemasonry in doing that, but specifically a former key U.S. intelligence operative.
And again, it's not surprising, I'm sure, to those who have been following this stuff, to find these kinds of contacts and, to use Dave's earlier word of the night, machinations involved. This is from Jonathan Marshall's translations. Again, this is the report of the P2 Commission. That's the Anselmi Commission. Now, this was published originally as a supplement to L'Espresso from May 20th, 1984. The organization, inspired and guided by Licio Gelli, developed in the sphere of the major Masonic family present in Italy, the Grand Orient of Palazzo Giustiniani. That just means Justinian Palace. Italian Masonry is composed of two main organizations or families named after their historic seats, Palazzo Giustiniani and Piazza del Gesù, the second of which appeared after a schism in 1908. The former has 15 to 20,000 members, the latter 5 to 10,000. In Giustiniani, a new member can be brought in without the normal vote by the Grand Master, and they can belong to a covered lodge known as Propaganda. This hides it from the rest of the world, and even from other Masons. Giustiniani is oriented towards British Masonry, whereas Gesù recognizes the Latin hegemony of French Masonry. But there is an important American connection to Giustiniani, too. The craftsmen of the first recognition of the Italian Grand Orient, G-O-I, on the part of the prestigious District of the Northern United States, these are all Masonry affiliations, on the part of the prestigious District of the Northern United States, the United Grand Lodge of England recognized it only in 1972, was in fact in 1947. So the United States recognized this particular lodge well before, this whole Italian Masonic affiliation well before Britain did. Frank Gigliotti, an ex-agent of the Italian section of OSS, of course that's the American Office of Strategic Services, our intelligence corps during the war, from 1941 to 45, in the period when Gelli collaborated with the counterintelligence corps, and hence with agents of the CIA, see who's who of the CIA of the time alleged to the Siniscalchi memoirs of 1976. Later, Gigliotti was president of, quote, Action Committee, constituted in the United States to respond to appeals sent by GOI brothers engaged in the difficult work of reopening the Masonic House of Palazzo Giustiniani. The compromise among GOI and the Italian state, sponsored by the American brothers, was dated July 7, 1960. The transaction was signed by the Minister of Finance Trabucci and GM Grandmaster Publio Cortini, and present at the table were the American ambassador Jay Zellerbach and Frank Gigliotti. Also in 1960, the American brothers brought to a good end, thanks to Gigliotti, another operation close to their heart, the unification of the Supreme Council of the Serene Grand Lodge of the Alam of the Sicilian Prince Giovanni Aliata di Montreale, whose name was linked to the Borghese coup, to Rosa Diventi, another coup, and to the Mafia, then ended in P2 with the GOI. It seems that the unification of the GOI with the black masonry of Aliata was Gigliotti's condition in exchange for the American intervention in the accord between the Italian government and the Palazzo Giustiniani. And rather than go into the last, we don't want to get off into Spadafora, do we?
Well, actually, no. It would just be very interesting that the concluding, just for the heck of it, we'll toss it out. It says, Flamini notes Aliata was close to Libya. We'll be talking about Libya next week. Was he also close to Spadafora? Prince Guiteri de Spadafora was not only an Italian fascist, but one of the key members of Permandex, the NATO intelligence front involved in the assassination of President Kennedy. Interestingly enough, Clay Shaw, one of its board of directors, was associated with the Borghese's, the very same Borghese's they were looking at in the 1970 coup. So it do go round. That once again from L'Espresso of May 20th, 1984. The point being here that the Italian Grand Orient GOI of the Justinian Palace was basically elevated into a functional state after World War II by American Masons, and the key person in doing this was the head of OSS in Italy at that time, Frank Gigliotti, who later on was listed as a CIA agent as well. And one of the things that, according to this article, Gigliotti, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, Gigliotti we'll call him, insisted upon was the unification of the GOI, the Italian Grand Orient, with the black masonry, as it's called, the explicitly fascist masonry of the Montereale brothers. And so, Giovanni di Montereale. And so it... We can't draw any definite conclusions, but the role of U.S. intelligence in establishing fascist Italian masonry here shouldn't be underestimated in light of the way in which the merry-go-round has revolved to the United States.
Yeah, it's also notable that Gigliotti was involved in the OSS in Italy at the same time that Licio Gelli was making his contacts there as well, as is mentioned specifically in this.
And also, of course, recalling our very first program, Alan Dulles and the OSS were intimately involved in setting up the Rat Line. And in fact, that was that the Rat Line was in good measure an OSS operation.
Okay, well, that just about wraps it up in terms of information tonight. In just a moment, Dave is going to give you some information again on where you can find these tapes if you haven't had an opportunity to tape them themselves. I will just mention, those of you who tuned in late and missed our sterling and exciting intro tonight, that for those of you who say, well, yeah, so it's a semi-worldwide conspiracy, so we've got Italy and, you know, Latin America and the United States, but what about the whole rest of the world? Well, folks, you ain't seen nothing yet, and next week, we will, as we continue to expand the involvement...
As the world turns.
As the world turns. As we continue to expand our identification of the involvement of various groups in the assassination attempt on the Pope, as we begin to draw in closer the actual involvement of the people who either supplied the gun, trained the killer, would-be killer, or pulled the bullet, the man himself, we will also be looking at the involvement of P2 and these related groups all over the world, Africa, the Middle East... bits and pieces of Asia, Australia even. It comes all over the world, and we're going to be talking about it next week. So that is the next broadcast coming up, the second to the last, in this Radio Free America special archive series on the Mediterranean merry-go-round.
Well, all of our archive shows, for those of you who may have just tuned in and are wondering, my God, what in the world are they doing? These archive shows that we're doing are specifically done in order to be taped, and our... archive shows, all of them, the Vatican shows so far, our Guns of November series about President Kennedy's assassination, Uncle Sam and the Swastika, which is going to be coming up soon, are all available from a tape duplication service called DavCore. That's spelled D-A-V-K-O-R-E. They're located at Suite 1300D, Space Park Way. That's three words, just like it sounds. It's down by the NASA Ames facility. Space Park Way, Mountain View, California, 94043. And the zip is, phone number rather, is 415-969-3030. Write or phone to the attention of Paul. That address once again, DAVCOR, Suite 1300D, Space Parkway, Mountain View, California, 94043, phone 415-969-3030, write or phone to the attention of Paul. And once again, neither Nip nor myself nor the station makes any money off of this deal.